Now, I'm delighted to welcome to the programme Lorna Fitzpatrick, who is President-elect of the Union of Students in Ireland. First of all, Lorna, congratulations on your victory and your assume the mantle of President of the Union of Students in Ireland at a time, Lorna, I think, where a lot of students are very worried.
Yes, I suppose, firstly, thanks very much. To get to the core issues, I suppose, yes, most definitely. There's a lot of students who are very worried around the country for many different reasons, but I suppose one that's at the very forefront of our movement continuously is around higher education funding and publicly funded higher education, as was called for in the Cassell's report in 2016. And unfortunately, we've yet to see any action from government in terms of putting in place the models that were described within that report. We would obviously be calling for option one, which is publicly funded higher education, which would see investment into the system, but would also see a reduction in the student contribution charge and an increased support through financial support such as SUSE for students. And I suppose we held an action a couple of weeks ago between the Coalition for Publicly Funded Higher Education, which USI were founding members of, called Fund the Future. And that action took place on local campuses around the country. And it was a joint action between staff and students calling on the government to take action. And following on from that, we did receive comments from the Taoiseach to say that the models of student loans would not be favourable, and that an increase to the student contribution charge would also not be favourable. But now what we need to see is action on this issue and to ensure that it's not just talk anymore.
Lorna, probably an unfair question, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. Let us say that your parents' bank account does not qualify you for any assistance in going to third level. And let us say that you want to be, solicitor, let's say. What's that, 6 years? Is it 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah, well, you have an undergrad and then a postgraduate, and both those systems are funded completely differently as well.
How much is it going to cost you out of your own pocket for 6 years at third level without funding?
Well, the undergraduate courses are €3,000 a year at the moment, which after Brexit will be the highest fees in Europe. And then your postgraduate courses can vary depending. So there's no one. There is a figure, of course, for becoming a solicitor, but I don't have that off the top of my head, depending on which college you go to, etc. There could be additional costs. So the actual student contribution charge is the €3,000 per year for an undergraduate course. Some universities and colleges would then have levies that students would pay on top of that. So it's hard to put an exact figure on it, but it is a substantial amount of money. And the DIT cost of living guide they produce on an annual basis has shown for the average cost of living for a student living away from home outside of Dublin for 2018-2019 was over €1,300 per month. So that's a significant amount of money for students and their families to try and gather to pay for a third level education. And I suppose what the two highest costs within that €1,314 is the €3,000 fee and then also the cost of accommodation. So both of those have taken up large chunks of students' money and student and family money, I suppose, in trying to ensure that students can get an education.
Yeah, I mean, the figure, of course, Lorna, which jumps off the page there, is the cost of accommodation, which is, by any stretch of the imagination, exorbitant. And I suppose, Lorna, in a roundabout way, that is why I asked you the question the way I did, because, or maybe phrased the question the way I did, because I would be of the opinion, and I would be really, really interested in hearing your answer to this, that prohibitive cost in relation to just accommodation alone, never mind the €3,000 a year, which is big money in anybody's language, or in most people's language, but that accommodation cost would put the prospect of third level education beyond the reach of many people from underprivileged backgrounds?
Well, like, we've spoken to students throughout the year, and I spoke to yourself earlier on in the year about this as well, but like, throughout the year we've heard from students who are sleeping on friends' couches, who are staying in cars outside of college campuses, who are actually registered as homeless. And in 2016, on the night of the census, 8% of the total homelessness figures were students. So, like, that is a massive concern, and the issue around accommodation has been a massive concern for the Union of Students in Ireland for the last number of years. And we've done significant work on it this year, and we've presented to the Oireachtas Committee twice on the issue. And we do cautiously welcome the announcement from earlier on this, or from just last week, where the Residential Tenancy Bill will be amended to include purpose-built student accommodation under the rent pressure zone legislation, so that student accommodation can not increase by more than 4% on year, which we don't have at the moment. And once this legislation goes through and is enacted, then we will. But up until that point, we still see where student accommodation charges are dramatically increasing. This last summer, we've seen 18% increases in Galway. We've seen 27% increase in Dublin. This year, for the coming September, we've seen a 20% increase in Galway again. We've seen 10% increases on year-on-year rent in Cork. So it is an absolute serious concern for students and for their families when they're talking about going to higher education. And we know that students have kind of considered the colleges that they're going to attend and where they're placing on their CAOs based on the accommodation crisis in those cities and towns. So it is a serious issue for students. It's at a crisis point, and that is why we've done so much work on the area. And now we do welcome the fact that our student accommodation, purpose-built student accommodation, will come under the rent pressure zones. But up until that point, we need to make sure that we're staying at the front of this to ensure that families, that students and their families aren't going to be any more out of pocket for accommodation alone.
Lorna, question that comes to mind as you talked there, and you're a native of Gorey in County Wexford, lovely yeah. town, lovely town, actually, I know it well. And we'll say, for argument's sake, that you and three of your buddies were attending, let's say, DCU. So it would not be feasible for you to travel up and down every day, even though we know, Lorna, that there are people doing it. Let's be honest, they are mm-hmm. doing it. But we'll say that you and three or four of your buddies have a house rented here on anywhere close to DCU on the north side of the city. And as we know, students are, it's exam time now and next month, and then they go away for the summer. Do you have a guarantee that that house will be still there for you when you return next September, or whenever the third level curriculum kicks back in again? Or can the landlord quite simply say, oh, sorry, I've rented it to somebody else, or the other one then, I'm not renting it out because I'm doing it up, or there's a family member moving in?
So it varies depending on each individual landlord and each individual contract that there would be. Sometimes students, so the college year will take place for 9 months usually, and so sometimes students will sign up to a 9 month lease for a property. In that case, then their lease ends. Unless they agree to a new lease with the landlord, that property won't remain there for them. However, some do take up 12 month leases and pay for the accommodation over the summer while they're not there, to try and guarantee them to have that accommodation for the year ahead. But the problem is, with purpose-built student accommodation, students weren't seen as tenants. They were seen as licensees, and so didn't have the same protections as tenants would have under the law. Now, again, last week that we did see comments from the minister to change that, and so students will be able to avail of RTB kind of protections for this coming year ahead. So it is, there are positive steps happening, and we are seeing movements in the right direction, but it hasn't came overnight from just miraculously. It has came from long months and years of work from students and student representatives around the country. And I suppose DCU were one of the leaders in that in the time last year from Shinoan Shakedown, where the increase in rents went up by like 27% overnight, affecting DCU students. So the situation can vary dramatically depending on the type of property or the landlord or the agreement and the lease that you have in place. But in a situation where a student has signed up for a 9-month lease, there's no guarantee that property will remain. If they sign up for a 12-month lease, there's also, under the legislation, no right. The landlord has the right to end that tenancy after the 12-month period if they wish to do so. So, technically, no, not really.
Yeah, security of tenure seems to be a common thread that runs through this entirely. And I mean, the reason I asked you the question, Lauren, is because a lot of people, as I said, will be doing their exams now at the moment. So they have the worry and pressure of exams and waiting on the exam results, but also then the pressure that next September or October they may not have a bed to sleep on when they return to college.
Yeah, so a lot of students will start looking for accommodation for next year now, and in the next couple of weeks, because we know over the summer, once the AAO time kicks in, we'll see an absolute ambush again for all the student accommodation, for students who are coming from second level looking to get into higher education or further education, and they're looking for somewhere to live. And it'll be a mental time again for everybody trying to find accommodation. And so anyone who is returning tries to look at that a little bit earlier. But again, they're doing that on the basis that they've passed their exams and they're hoping that they've done so. But like there's no guarantee that accommodation will be there for them. So it is a very, very stressful time for students who are continuing, but also then later in the summer for students who are coming out of second level or looking to enter into third level, maybe as a mature student or whatever, and are looking for accommodation. And like it's a very difficult time to be able to try and source that accommodation then as well.
Lorna, in my time, which was a long, long time ago now, we're talking late 70s, very late 70s, very early 80s. A lot of people funded their third level education by going to England and working there during the summer. Is that still an option, or has the dreaded B word scuppered that?
Well, students do work over the summer periods and over any period that they can to try and, I suppose, save money to be able to pay for the year ahead. But it is worth noting that under the SUSE system that we have in place, there is a certain limit to the amount that students can earn throughout those summer periods before it affects their threshold for their SUSE grant for the following year. So we do have to bear that in mind as well. In terms of the dreaded B word, that is something that we're working on with our partners in NUS USI in the north, and NUS, which is the National Union of Students in the UK as well, to try and ensure that students aren't negatively affected by the fallout of Brexit. But it's very unknown at the moment, and I think that's clear across the board, and we don't know what effect it is going to have. But people are definitely more cautious about it at the moment.
Yeah, it is amazing. I compare it, I suppose, to the pebble into the pond. It's the ripple effects of this that nobody thought about in the beginning, and there is something. And it's actually the first time I've heard it addressed, Lorna, in the entire Brexit debate, which has gone on now for 3 years, was the effect that it could have on students who are trying to maybe even reciprocate and get educated there, or go and work there during the summer. You know, it's, as I said, in all the debates, on all the platforms around the place that I've heard, and in all the publications, this is actually the first time I've heard the issue of students and Brexit being brought up. So fair play to you for that one. Lorna, you're... Sally, go on, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, 2 weeks ago at our National Congress, we passed our Brexit strategy. And so that is something that we're committed to. And it, like, we have to bear in mind that, like, the there are many students on the border as well who cross the border quite regularly either to live or to have a get their education, and so we will be working with our partners and through our trilateral agreement with NUSUSI and NUSUK to ensure that we can ensure that students aren't negatively affected.
Yes, indeed, and I remember at the very start of the year in early January, I did an interview here with Jim Doherty, who lives in the Inishowen Peninsula in Donegal and who lectures in Derry. And he was saying that, 20-25 minutes handy gets him from his front door to his car parking space at the college. But he previously attended there as a student during the Troubles, and that could, the same journey could have taken him 2.5 hours if he was lucky enough to make it on a particular day. So these are the prospects that daunt. And as you say, there are quite a lot of students who travel backwards and forwards every day across the border, each way, to their education.
And like, so we want to make sure that those students aren't negatively affected, but we also want to make sure that we, like, protect the right to education. And also, I suppose, to try and ensure that students still have access to EU funding on teaching and learning and mobility programs and exchange programs such as Erasmus Plus and things like that that have been absolutely amazing for students. And so we want to make sure that people still have access to those initiatives as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things that nobody factored into this that are all of a sudden starting to come to light. And I have to say to you, Lorna, fair play to you for highlighting them here with us today, particularly, as you said, the Erasmus programme. Lorna, your tenure as President of the Union of Students in Ireland commences in, is it June or July?
The 1st of July.
How long will you be in office for?
1 year. We're all elected on 1 year positions.
And because of the fact that you were elected, it meant you went before the electorate and they voted for you and you got the majority of the votes. And because you did that, I presume you had to put forward a manifesto. And what does Lorna Fitzpatrick want to accomplish in the 12 months when she's going to be president?
Well, I suppose some of the things that we've already discussed here will be at the very forefront of all that we'll do next year in terms of higher education funding. And not only in ensuring that our institutions and universities are funded to ensure that they are operating at the best that they can, but also to ensure that the student contribution charge is reduced and that we see improved financial support for students in the issue of accommodation, to ensure that higher education institutions can actually build suitable accommodation for students, and that we're not constantly relying on the private market, because of course the accommodation crisis that we speak about as students is not just a student issue, it's an accommodation crisis that's affecting people across the country. And so if we could have more purpose-built student accommodation and remove students in some part from the from the private sector, it could have a bigger impact on the overall accommodation crisis. But we need to look at many different issues around consent in higher education, and we've worked with the department on a consent strategy or consent framework, which was published 2 weeks ago by the Minister for Higher Education, and there has been money awarded there for higher education institutions to, I suppose, push forward in consent education and how they tackle the area of consent and sexual violence and harassment on their campuses. And we also are delighted to be working in partnership with Smart Consent in NUI Galway. And this will be for a delivery of a national survey on experiences by students about sexual harassment and rape, which will be the first of its kind since the 2013 Say Something survey that was launched by the Union of Students in Ireland. So it's that's going to be a very important piece of work that we undertake next year as well. But there's an awful lot that we need to do in ensuring that We are working with NUS USI and NUS UK in the north on Brexit, but also with NUS USI in the north around Irish language rights and social justice issues around marriage equality and abortion access in the north. And then, of course, we'll be preparing for a possible general election if that does come forward too.
Well, Lorna, it looks like you have a busy year, and once again congratulate you on your elevation to the office of President of the Union of Students of Ireland. Number two, I wish you well in your tenure as President. And number three, I thank you again for joining us today on Northside Today. It's lovely to talk to you again, Lorna, and I have no doubt we will chat during your tenure as President. Lorna Fitzpatrick, President-elect, Union of Students in Ireland, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Slán is benacht.